we have a great show for you tonight. We have a fantastic show. Very funny comedians. I know funny. I know very funny. People always ask me who I think is funny. That's the number two question I get asked as a comedian. The number one question I get asked as a comedian is, have you ever died? As soon as you tell someone you're a comedian, first thing they want to know, oh, you ever died? Oh, what's it like when no one laughs? Oh, tell us about the worst gig you've ever had in your life. Please, relive for me, in minute detail, the worst moment of your professional career. Have you ever really died? It's like saying to a doctor, tell us about the last patient you lost. What happened?
With the family crying. I bet they were they? Yeah, yeah.
People are such ghouls. It's the number one question, have you ever died? Number two question, though, is what makes you laugh? People always want to know that from me. Who do you think is funny? And that's a nicer question. That's more understandable. You know, I make people laugh. People want to know what makes me laugh. In the same way as you might say to your hairdresser, who cuts your hair? Or you might say to someone in an Audi, who do you think drives like a cock? I like that joke. It's a short joke. It's a sharp joke. And also with that joke, I get to spot every Audi driver in the room. I can just see a pinched expression on your face there. All right, no need to be like that about it. I've done well for myself. It's a very reliable machine. And the fact that I can tell you're an Audi driver by the expression on your face means technically you've just given a form of indication. So well done. Good for you. We knew you could do it. Yeah. Have you ever died? Who do you think is funny? You always get asked the same questions. That's what I don't like doing interviews. I love doing this job. This is great. I love standing here talking to you, though. But doing interviews, it's a necessary evil. It's part of the job. Oh, having to answer questions. And I don't even like watching interviews. You'd rather watch a comedian tell jokes than talk about how they wrote them. You'd rather watch a singer sing songs than talk about their inspiration. You'd rather watch a sports person do their sport. You'd certainly rather watch a sports person do their sport. Come on, now. Sports interviews can be turgid affairs at best. And then I hit it with my foot. You mean you kicked it? If you like. They're really interesting. They're really, and I'm not slagging sports people. It takes a great deal of single-mindedness to excel at a sport to a point where people want to interview you about it. But sports people are famous because they're good at sport, not because they're good at talking about sport. That's why you find a sports person who is good at talking about sport, the BBC will cream their knickers over them. We found a woman. She used to ride horses. That's a sport. And she's quite lively and engaging and charismatic. Put her on absolutely everything! Do not let her out of your sight! Even people I'm a fan of. Andy Murray. I love Andy Murray. Britain should be very proud of Andy Murray. He's done a lot to be proud of. He's won Wimbledon. He's an Olympic gold medalist. And he put up with a lot of shit when he was named, what, eighth best in the world? Oh, you bloody loser, you. Done a lot to be proud of. He's won Wimbledon, he's Olympic gold medals, he's magnanimous in victory, he's humble in defeat. He's a big comedy fan. He's been to see me live, I've met him, lovely bloke. But Jesus Christ. I have not listened to him drone on one more time about how he won, stroke lost, another tennis match. I can't do it.
Well, then I hit it to him, and he hit it back to me, and I'm very good at tennis, but he is also very good at tennis. Some days I'm better at tennis than he is, but I think what's happened today was he was slightly better at tennis than I am, and that's maybe why he won the game of the tennis.
Oh, for God's sake, man! I'm not very sporty, you can probably tell. I like hill walking. Doesn't really count as a sport. I like hill walking and camping. Proper camping, though. None of your glamping bullshit. Glamping. Derivation of the words glamorous and camping. Where you stay in a yurt, which is more expensive than a hotel. What is wrong with you? A lot of people don't realise yurt is a derivation of the words yura and twat. A lot of people don't realise that.
Do you love London? I love London. I feel like London is created by the people, right? Who are just crazy and sexy and ambitious. I got into an Uber the other day, not bragging, and I got into an Uber and the driver, he said, would you like to have the radio on? And I was like, oh, I don't mind, it's up to you. And then he said, well, actually, I make my own music. Do you mind if I put some of that on? No, I don't. And then he put on Drake's new album. I wonder how often it works. I wonder how often there's a middle-aged white woman thinking, oh, well, he looks like Aladdin and he sounds like confidence personified. Pull over and jump in the back, Nikolai. I'm having a good life. I have recently started doing yoga, which has just changed... Yes, woo for the yoga over there. Are you a team? I'm new to it. I love it. Yoga has changed my life. It's brilliant. Yoga is my new drug. My old drug was drugs. I'm not going to say anything positive about because it would be incredibly irresponsible. I'm not going to say anything positive about drug taking. What I will say is I didn't take MDMA until I was 32, and it was such a relief to know I could be happy. I'm just seeing the equipment's broken. But yoga is nearly as good, and there's no downsides. It's given me a whole new language. My favourite new word is namaste. Yeah, it's a very old word, it's very sacred, and it means the yoga has finished now. And then you're allowed to leave. I think that the key to being happy as you get older is self-acceptance. Like, I have to accept things about myself now. Like, I'm 36, I thought I would have children by now, and I don't. In an ideal world, what I wanted to self-fertilise. I wanted to have children that were exactly my genetics so that I could show them to my parents and go, see, it was my childhood, they're fine. Science can't do that yet. And then I had a crazy day last month where I just thought, I'm just going to buy some sperm. Off the internet. I've got a good job. I'm just going to buy some sperm. Guys, sperm is so much more expensive than I thought it was going to be. It is tens of thousands of pounds. We are all wasting a valuable resource. 17-year-old me would have been a millionaire if I'd learned how to catch it and chuck it in the freezer. It's a shock. I do think self-acceptance is the key. Like, there's things about myself I don't like, but I just have to accept now that they're not going to change. This is who I am. Like, so, for instance, I don't like art. I think art is rubbish. I think lots of people think art is rubbish, but we're too worried of looking stupid, so we go along with it. I think that the worst art form is theatre. Okay, I can sense how unpopular this opinion is. Hear me out. I think theatre is diabolical. Look, and also, I'm aware, if you are a performer of some kind, if you're an actor, look, please don't be offended. I don't mean being in the play. Obviously, if you're the person in the play that gets to put a wig on and walk up and down and move your arms and project your voice saying things like, I think you'll find you're contradicting yourself, Alan. Fun! Having to watch it. Dear Christ, I can't concentrate. I can't lose myself in the story. I know that it's not real because I'm surrounded by people eating crisps. And they don't let you look at your phone. So all you're thinking is, well, how long has it been?
I've realised that the musician I want to be is the drummer from Coldplay. I want to be the drummer from Coldplay so badly... because that dude is rich as shit and no one knows who the fuck he is. No one knows who the drummer from Coldplay is. He could be here and no one would know. It could be you, it could be you, it could be you. I'm not sure it's an Indian woman, but it could be. We don't know. I'm obsessed with the idea that this guy has the best life in the world. And I was telling my friend about this, and she tried to tell me something that she was trying to portray as a bad thing. Apparently, he loves Game of Thrones, so he said to HBO, can I be in Game of Thrones? And they were like, yeah, man, you're the drummer from Coldplay. You can do literally anything you want. We'll restart The Sopranos if that's something that will make you happy, right? Now, he's in Game of Thrones. Confession time, I don't watch Game of Thrones, but even I know The Red Wedding is an important episode of Game of Thrones, right? He is in The Red Wedding. Guess what he is doing in The Red Wedding? He is the drummer in the wedding band. That is the extent to which this guy's anonymity is a borderline superpower. He is in the most famous episode of one of the most popular television shows in the world, doing the thing he is famous for, and no one noticed. That is Kaiser Soze shit. And my friend was telling me that she read a supposedly embarrassing story that one of the actors told. One of the actors said that when they were shooting The Red Wedding, he was making small talk with the extras, and he got round to the drummer from Coldplay and said, "Are you a full-time extra?" And the guy was like, "No, I'm a musician." So he said to the drummer from Coldplay, "Have you played on anything I might have heard of?" To which the drummer from Coldplay was presumably like, "Have you heard of All Music?" Because I'm basically the drummer on All Music. And my friend tried to tell me this, like this was a sad thing. She was like, "Oh, this guy's in Coldplay, but no one knows that he's in Coldplay. Isn't that sad?" No, because the problem with being in Coldplay is that people hate Coldplay. People hate Coldplay so much. And the people who hate Coldplay don't say things like, "Oh, it's not to my taste." They say things like this, "I hate Coldplay!" But what you mean when you say that is, "I hate Chris Martin." No one is angry with the drummer from Coldplay. No one has ever been like, "Oh, the drummer from Coldplay! Ruin my life!" And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, "Nish, why are you so obsessed with the drummer from Coldplay? There's two other people in that band. We don't know anything about them either." And you know what? You're right. There's a guitar player and a bassist in Coldplay. I wouldn't know them even if they were here. I assume it's you two, but only because they sat next to her and I spoke to her already. That's all I've got to go on at this point. They have the exact same life as the drummer, because I did a bit of research into this. Turns out Coldplay are one of those bands where they split the royalties equally. So they have the exact same life as the drummer, apart from one detail. They have the exact same life as the drummer. They have the same level of wealth, access, and anonymity. But crucially, the drummer is sat down. And that is the dream.
This year, I did No Lilt February. Thank you. I know it sounds impossible, but you take it one day at a time. Did I have any today? No, you're a legend. It gets hard around the middle of the month. You get the cravings. It's called lilt guilt. You're like, "Oh, I bloody love the lilt." As the night where you go to the shop at midnight, you kick the doors in, "Where's the lilt?" And they're like, "We don't stock it anymore." Like, "Ah!" So you try and make your own hooch lilt, you know, where you get a pineapple and a grapefruit and you add in batteries and a horse's head. And you're like, "It's good, but it's not totally tropical." Did that joke in America recently. Turns out they don't have lilt there. This is all I do. Imagine if this was your actual. This is, I go like blah, 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 and you go, "Ah, ha, 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 money." I can't believe I get away with it. You do actual proper London jobs, you know, like blacksmith, you know? Farrier. Brunch DJ. The big three. I tell you, I do not trust people who work in offices. I know, right? What are they doing? Nothing takes that long. They're planning something. They must be. Do you know who you know? Do you ever call in to visit your friend in an office unexpectedly? Everyone just shits themselves. They're like, "What's he doing here? Lie, cover the screen, lie across the spreadsheet, get him out. Kind regards, warm regards, best, best." That's how they talk. I've seen the email. I know what it's like in the real world. Look, sometimes I check in your world. Oh, gross, back to showbiz. And no, I'm very self-aware of the level of fame that I have. I was in a supermarket recently and an older lady came up to me and she put her hands on my shoulders and she said, "You are vaguely familiar." And that is it. Wrexham, and I was at an ATM machine and a guy cycled by and he shouted at me, "Surprised to see you at an ATM machine," and I've been obsessed with it since then. What did he mean? Like, on the one hand, is he surprised I don't have a butler to go to the ATM machine for? No, I think it's the opposite. I think I'm surprised you have any money whatsoever doing keyboard horse shit. Here's my greatest ever showbiz tale. I did a gig in your Milton Keynes recently, thank you, and I was staying in the Milton Keynes Hilton, and she is the least well-known of all the Hilton sisters. And I checked in after the gig at like 12:30. Room 303 is where this took place. Open the door, TV on in the room. Not that uncommon in the chain hotels. I guess it's to welcome you. But get this, on the TV is me playing the shitty keyboard on some show. Immediate thought is like, is this a service they provide to all guests? If so, no, it's the realization, this is it. I've arrived, and I waltz into the room down the little corridor with the loo away to the left, and as the room opens out, there is a fully naked man lying on the bed. So they've given me the key to someone else's room. But he is lying there, watching me on the TV, and he looks up. Think of something smart. What I say is like, oh shit, sorry about it. I could have said anything and I'd be a legend. I could have been like, oh, are you enjoying this? Ah, no boner. And just walked out of it.
The problem is the builders, my dad's mate, he's a proper geezer, proper Southeast London geezer. One of those builders, you know that walk? Just walks like that. His legs like he's got a pool table between his legs. And he walks like that, and also he's got those really thin jogging bottoms. You know, those like grey jogging bottoms that builders wear. I don't know where they get them from. They're so thin, and it just grabs onto anything that's there. It's just like I'm getting stared out by his knob and balls as he comes in. And at some time, it's weirder than him being naked. I don't know why. It feels more intrusive. He's like, hello, son, what we got here? I don't know. Everything's here. Walking around like that. I reckon I could draw his knob and bollocks from memory better than mine. So he's coming like that. And I'm like, oh, God. I go, do you want a cup of tea? He goes, yeah, I'll have a cup of tea. I went, how many sugars? He went, 13. That's not a cup of tea anymore, that's a pudding. That's an angel delight of a tea bag, innit? 13 sugars, I'd all make sticking it in. It's about £3 worth of sugar. He come around for a quote. It's already cost me. I put 14 in to test him. Give it him. He went, it's a bit sweet, isn't it? You winding me up. You know me on 13, you greedy bastard. Oh, type 2 Terry's come round and it's a bit sweet for him, is it? When are you going to do this job? I want it done before your foot comes off, all right? Anyway, I had a Kit Kat in the fridge, right? I thought, right, let's get him back on side of Kit Kat. Right? He's into sugar. I like introducing people to new things. See if he wants a Kit Kat. Four-finger Kit Kat. Like, how would you eat a Kit Kat? Four fingers? I've said that wrong, haven't I? I thought you looked at me funny. Sorry, I said that like it was your name. I meant to say. I don't know what I meant to say. How would you eat a four-finger Kit Kat? But I went, how would you eat a Kit Kat? Four fingers. Oh, God. Hello, four fingers, how's it going? Who needs thumbs, eh? Need to smoke by the looks of things. Sorry about that. Not an ideal nickname for a young lady, is it, really? So what would you do? One finger at a time? Is that what you'd... Should we start again? Sorry, what's your name?
Anita.
Nice to meet you, Anita. Sorry for calling you Four Fingers. Anyway, Anita, how'd you meet a Kit Kat? That's what I was going for.
One at a time.
One at a time, right. One at a time's a normal approach to a fourth. Yes. Anyway, one at a time's a normal approach to a four-finger Kit Kat, isn't it, right? I gave this builder a four-finger Kit Kat. He picked it up.
put the whole thing in his mouth at once.
Bit into it like he was eating a bun. Dirty ogre sugar bitch. What kind of animal is one popping a four-finger Kit Kat?
It's lovely to be here. I've come all the way from Brighton. Just in case you're wondering what this haircut is about. Might be a new face for some of you people. Don't panic, the BBC invited me here because they needed a beige lesbian. So I'm just here to tick some boxes. Not your box, madam, just a metaphorical box. I'm half Spanish, that's what's happening there. I've got a Spanish mum, and she lives here in the UK. It's all very legal. She's lived longer in the UK than she's ever lived in Spain, but the brilliant thing about my mum is that she's never lost her accent. She's doing very, very good. She's doing that. Lost a word she cannot pronounce. Lost a word she cannot pronounce, huh? My favourite word that my mum's never been able to pronounce is my brother's name. It's not even a difficult name, his name's Stephen. This Spanish people, any word that begins with the letter S, they struggle, right? So my mum doesn't call him Stephen. She calls him
Esteban.
What's his name, mum?
Esteban.
Is it? Isn't it just Stephen? Even if I know his name is my son, it is Esteban! You don't want to mess with my mum. She's not like British people here in this country. We can be quite passive-aggressive, can't we? She's just a very aggressive woman. I don't know how my mum's never really coped in this country, and I think it's because, like a lot of Mediterranean people, she's quite loud, yeah? She's got one volume. It's like this. Hello! How are you? Whereas in this country, particularly if we're middle class, we tend to be low talkers, don't we? We don't like to raise our voices, do we? Why? Because we've got money. And we just assume that if you are raising your voice, well, you're probably poor. Or worse, foreign. Great thing about having a Mediterranean mum is they feed you. Oh, my God. She's always feeding. That's her way of showing that she loves her children, is to feed us, you know? I can remember going around friends' houses, you know, like English mums. Go around an English mum's house and the conversation with mum's more like this. I think you've had enough. My mum will feed you till you puke. Anything can be going on in my life and my mum will relate it back to a meal that she's cooked. Do you know what I mean? Like, so good or bad, particularly if I'm depressed. If I phone up my mum and I've had a terrible day, yeah? I phone up my mum, conversation always goes like this. Oh, Jennifer, my God, I'm so sorry to hear that you're having a hard time right now. But you know what? Don't worry, okay? I made a soup. Come home. You sound hungry. I made a chicken curry, I made a lamb tagine, I made a casserole, Jennifer. I made some tortillas, some paella, some curry, Jennifer. You love curry, maybe some meatballs, some pork ball, beef ball, aniseed ball, banana ball. You are a lesbian. You don't eat enough balls. Please, come home. Eat my balls.
We've moved now. We've moved to a place called Pinner. We only moved to Pinner because the estate agent said to us, he said, oh, Pinner is a lovely part of West London. West London. We get Welsh telly. So... It's not London, but it is very nice. One of the things I like about where we live is it's very multicultural. I think that's one of the brilliant things about London. I think multiculturalism is something we really have to fight for. Like, the school my kids go to, it was very easy to pick a school for my kids because obviously we just picked the one with the highest ceilings. But the school they go to, it's a really nice school and it's very diverse. Like, we have a mum's night out once a month and all the mums from the school go, and there are women there from every economic background, every race, every religion. And we have a fantastic time, and the Muslim mums drive us home. yeah, tell you what, it is nice. nice. I had an incident the other day, though. I was walking down the street near where I live, and it was one of those sunny days, one of those days that remind some van drivers that women have breasts. You know, one of those. And I was walking down the street, and there was a van drove up and slowed down, and two guys leaned out of the van, and they were in classic kind of leching position. And I knew they weren't going to be looking at me because I am 44 years old. And in fact, my older friends, when I was turning 40, they said, oh, being over 40, oh, it makes you invisible, right? And I have found, yes, that is true, but the brilliant thing is it mostly makes you invisible to dickheads. So it's not really a problem. It's a superpower, if anything. So I'm walking down the street. These two guys are leaning out of this van, and I see they're leching, but they're looking past me at a younger woman, a woman in her 20s, who is walking alongside me. And these guys do the classic thing. They lean out of the van, and they gave this woman a very detailed appraisal of her anatomy. You know, they covered all the main areas in bullet-pointed form. Very thorough. And then they went on to suggest what I can only describe as a smorgasbord of activities they felt they would enjoy indulging in with her were they not under pressure of time to get to the next plumbing job. So they did all this and they drove off. And naturally, I turned to this woman and I said, oh my gosh, are you okay? That was horrific. And she said, no, I'm fine. It happens all the time. And I thought, yeah, it does when you're in your 20s, doesn't it? And we were chatting about how silly it was as we walked down the street. And then we got further down the road and the traffic had slowed down and this van had come to a stop. And I think a few years ago, I would have just left it, said nothing. But this year, I thought, you know what? If I'm going to be invisible, you know who else is invisible? Ninjas. I'm going to be a bloody middle-aged ninja. I'm going to strike, right? So I went up to the van and I just leaned in and I said, oh, hi, guys. Listen, sorry to bother you. I just wanted to say thank you so much for what you did back there because my son here has been undergoing a very difficult gender reassignment. Worried that it's not going that well, but what you did back there really made him feel like a proper woman. Thank you. I was delighted with myself as well. But what was really special was that then the young woman next to me leaned in beside me and in the deepest voice I've ever heard just went,
yeah, thanks, guys.
Beautiful moment. Obviously, it wasn't perfect. The only thing that could have made it perfect would have been if the guys in the van had said, actually, if your child is undergoing a gender reassignment, it's incredibly insensitive of you still to be referring to her using the male pronoun. But, they didn't do that. They just called us slags.
Let's lighten the mood a little bit. Let's talk about terrorism. Terrorism... Listen! One of my main issues with terrorism is simple, all right? It's got people that have known me my entire life doubting my credibility, all right? It's mad thing. And I want to let you know, all right? You guys are a little bit worried at the moment. I'll make it explicit for you. I am not a member of ISIS, all right? I'm not, okay? I have nothing to do with those people. I don't follow their ideology. That's because I've got 6 months left on my Al-Qaeda membership. I'm a lot... Where do they go? My gosh, I'm going to get some water, all right? Flip me, neck. It was a bad choice wearing this heavy-ass jacket, you know what I mean? You know what, actually? Ooh, it's squirting all over the place. I tell you what is the biggest threat to Muslims on the face of the planet today, all right? Dehydration. We cannot carry around clear liquids in a bottle anywhere, all right? Here on this stage, dying in airplanes, stressing me out. But the thing about, listen, yeah, can I pop this here? Bruv, can you have that? Thank you, my G. One of the worst things about terrorism is how it's got people doubting my credibility, people I've known my whole life, all right? I want to give you an example. I've got a neighbour, okay? She's called Maud. She's known me for 27 years. And because of the media narrative, the way that the media portrays Muslims, minorities, Black Lives Matter, the world is very divisive. Who in this room just wants to live and get along? Make some noise. Exactly, we all want to, all right? But the media has got people doubting me, all right? So I've had my neighbour 27 years. We've got it's a nice, simple thing. It's a neighbourly thing to do, all right? A regular Friday wheelie bin ritual. We grab the wheelie bin, drag it down to the end of the driveway, have a quick natter, go back in. It's what neighbours do, innit? It's what neighbours do, all right? This particular Friday, Maud is like clockwork, but she was late. And I'm thinking, rah, is Maud okay? I hope she's all right. Usually she's like, the bin was stinking of shit, but I thought, you know what, I'm gonna stay here. I'm gonna be a good neighbor and have this conversation. Boom. 3 minutes later, boom! She kicks open the door. She's stressed. She's flustered. I said, Maud, is everything okay? She says, now, Gus, everything is far from all right. Have you seen the news? I'm like, listen, Maud, a lot of my cousins are on there. I don't watch that shit. You know that. Bring back a lot of bad memories for me, Maud. She says, Gus, it's the ISIS. I-Z-I. She's from Birmingham. That's how she spells it. It's the ISIS. They've been doing terrible bloody terrorisms again, them lot. I was like, yo, Maud, listen, that's bad. I don't agree with those people. And, you know, I hope they're brought to justice. She says, you say that, Guzzy, yeah? But you got to tell me something, babes. You're nothing like them, are you? I said, what? Maud, you know me. 27 years, baby. I'm nothing like them. Stop buying into the media narrative. Stop buying into the news. I'm me, Guz, your neighbour. She says, I know, you say that. It's just from very specific angles. This is a very Bin Laden look you've got going on there. I said, hey! I don't even look like that guy. Very racist. She says, Guz, I know, I'm just being silly. But you just do me one more favour though, babes, okay? It's just more for my rod, really, yeah? If you hear anything about it before the news does, just let me know.
I get concerned about the message that we send, you know, young women a lot on TV and, you know, in the media, because right now we live at the height of materialism where it's suggested to young girls especially that you can indulge the most depraved man as long as he's rich. This is evidenced by the franchise 50 Shades of Grey. Has everybody here seen 50 Shades of Grey or read it? Okay, some of you are shaking your heads. Fine. I will give you a quick plot summary of 50 Shades of Grey. I will be paraphrasing in this monologue, by the way. Is everybody ready? Yeah. Here is 50 Shades of Grey, abridged by Dame Baptiste.
Hi, I'm a pretty naive American young girl who doesn't know about sex, even though I have access to the internet and my friend's a journalist. Mr. Grey, you seem so mysterious and rich. Can I interview you?
That's right, baby. I am mysterious, and I'm rich as hell. Can I put a pineapple in your ass?
I mean, some other stuff happens, but that's pretty much it. It's fair. Unfortunately, we live in a time where, you know, materialism is encouraged, you know? Do you guys remember the song No Scrubs by TLC? Yeah, great song for the ladies. Not so fun for the unemployed male. That was not a fun song to hear when I was younger. Do you remember how that song used to go? If you live at home with your mama, oh yes, son, I'm talking to you. If you live at home with your mother, they're talking to you. What if I'm a full-time carer? I'm supposed to leave my mother lumbered with bedroom tax, then go live with a bunch of strangers and pay somebody else's mortgage, then have those strangers question my life choices, which my mother already does, but I get rice and peas when she does it. Sitting in the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. Sitting in the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I'm sorry, if me and my friends are concerned about our carbon footprint, I'm not entitled to find love? If you don't have a car and you're walking, oh yes, son, I'm talking to you. If you don't have a car and you're walking, they're talking to you. So we're supposed to leave our houses in four separate cars. Knowing full well petrol prices are at £1.25 per litre in some stations. Then if you go into London, you're paying a congestion charge four times. If you're going out of London, you're paying a toll charge four times. Then wherever we get when we're going, then you've got to pay a parking charge four times. And if we're all driving, then guess what we can't do? We can't drink, because when you all take separate cars, there's no designated driver, TLC. Which means when we finally do get to the club, because of all the traffic, because there's four cars adding to that traffic, we gotta drink water and sparkling water, then pay club prices for fruit juice. So I'm paying £7.25 for a cranberry juice, and we've been planning this night for months, TLC!
People ask me, they say, Chris, what is it like trying to raise a child when you can't see the child? It's ups and downs, you know, ups and downs. You just got to go with the flow. Can't prepare yourself, you know. She's 3.5 now. When she was 2.5, if you haven't got kids, by the way, as soon as they get to 2, they're adorable. They just start asking questions. They want to know what everything is. You are their source of information. They want to absorb the world. My daughter, she's 2.5. She's in the bath. I'm knelt there. I'm bathing her. She's like, what? What's this, Daddy? What's this, Daddy? Oh, bloody no, do I? Give it here. Just... you might be 2.5, but you know way more than Daddy at this point, sweetheart. What's this, Daddy? Ice cream? I was like, ice cream? Big handful of shit, wasn't it? Massive. Sweetness, where did that cut? An impressive quantity for an adult male. I wasn't entirely sure the dog hadn't jumped in and done it when my back was turned, and she just scooped it out. She just slapped it in there in one go. It threw me. I didn't... Look, right, I obviously didn't see it coming. I didn't even... No. I didn't even smell it coming. This came from underwater. This was a stealth move, right? And I'm not entirely sure exactly what happened, you know. I've narrowed it down to 2 options, I think. I've given it some thought. I mean, she was 2.5. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt. She deserves the benefit of the doubt, doesn't she? Option one, benefit of the doubt. This is what happened. She sat in the bath in the warm water. Yeah? She farts. She shits herself. She doesn't know she's done that. A few minutes later, that goes floating past her in the bath, doesn't it? She... She sees it there. She thinks to herself, I wonder what the bloody hell that is. That looks a little bit like ice cream. I know, she thinks. I'll ask Daddy about that. He knows about these things. He's a very, very clever man, yeah? That's option one, isn't it? Benefit of the doubt. Option two. She's a bloody comedy genius. She's sat there in the bath. She's got Mr. Penguin up here on the wall. She's got, hey, Mr. Penguin, Mr. Penguin. Get on this now. This is going to be brilliant. This is going to be amazing. Watch his face now. Watch his face. Watch. Keep looking. Keep looking. What am I going to do? Not only am I going to do a shit and put it in his hand, I bet you I can make him sniff it. Ice cream, Daddy. Ice cream, huh? We were very lucky with my daughter. So they say you got to watch your language around your kids, don't they? That's what they say. We were very lucky. My daughter's first words, apart from hand on heart, apart from mama, dada, baba, all that nonsense, her first words were go away. That's what she said. That's what she said for 3 months. Go away. Go away. She thought it was just one word. Go away. Go away. Why? Because that's what me and my wife said to the dog every time we were trying to feed my daughter. Get the food out, wouldn't we? The dog would get up, he'd go on the prowl, having a little look, wouldn't we? We'd be like, go away, go away, go away. She just picked it up. We'd push her in the pram out on the street. She'd be like, go away, go away, go away. Said to me wife, it's a good job we weren't telling that dog to fuck off, wouldn't it? Because we just wouldn't be able to take this kid out of the house.
Going away with my wife. She does this thing, right? If you get her in an airport, I'm not allowed to have my own passport. It's embarrassing. I'm a 40-year-old man. I get to passport control. They say, you got your passport, mate? I'm like, no. I'm not allowed to carry it. Apparently, I'm not mature enough. I don't know what happens, man. The moment you get near an airport, she becomes like some sort of Russian people trafficker. Do you know what I mean? She's like, I must have all the passports.
You cannot handle passport. You are too stupid for passport. I must keep all passports in zippy clear travel document folder, eh? Alongside printout from TripAdvisor. But you may carry the bags. I'm like a peasant boy for the day. Oh, thank you, master. Thank you very much. Yes, it's a real honor for me to carry your bags, you know. 11 pair of shoes for 3-day mini break is a good idea. Yes. Maybe you will become a centipede while we are in Egypt. Who knows? I went on a stag do recently. I went to the Munich Beer Festival. Has anybody here been to the Munich Beer Fest? Seemingly everybody. How many days did you go for, mate? No days. Got deported on arrival. We went for 7 days. We got there on a Monday, right? We had 6 straight days drinking, Monday through Saturday. And on Sunday, we said, we've got to do something different, right? So we went to Dachau concentration camp. Yeah. It was a weird shout. There's no getting away from it. Could have gone go-karting. I said, no, let's do some World War II here. Took a long time to get there, and when we got there, it was shut. Now, yeah, it felt inconvenient. However, given the wider backdrop of historical suffering, I didn't necessarily think that my inconvenience was that big a deal, right? So I just thought, I'll take it on the chin. But we had a mate of us called Tim, and Tim started popping off at the German security guard. He said, mate, it's a Sunday, yeah? It's a big tourist day. It's outrageous that it's shut. I said, to be fair, it's outrageous that it was ever open. You know what I mean? It is weird that you're making this about you, Tim, to be honest. People say dumb things, though, don't they? I was having a beer with my mate Wayne the other day, and Wayne likes to tell you where he was on the occasion of big historical news events that happened within our lifetime, right? So I mentioned 9/11, and Wayne went, 9/11, remember where I was that day? I was like, don't care where you were. I see how it's relevant. I don't see how your whereabouts on that fateful, terrible day will form some sort of meaningful historical footnote, Wayne. I'm being honest here. He looked hurt. He went, all right, where were you? He went, karate. I went, see, that's exactly the sort of trivial shit I was worried about, Wayne. He said, well, you know, I was in New York 6 months before that. Makes you think, doesn't it? I was like, no. No, to be honest, all it makes me think is I wish you'd been there 6 months later.
I said, what do you want? He goes, I want a cat. And I said, a cat? Nah, I'm not gonna buy you a cat. No one gets a pet for Christmas. And you know what happened? I'll tell you what happened. There was a mouse, a little mouse. It came into the house and the girlfriend, she saw it, she goes, ah, what's he doing in here? What's he doing in here? We've got a mortgage. Like, that's got to do with anything. Like, all the mice is outside there. It's like, hold on, guys, before we go in there, we need to see if this is rental accommodation first. Yo, fam, put that cheese down. We haven't seen the tenancy agreements yet. It might be a hoax, right? It don't work that way. So she was like, Marlon, we need a cat. I said, I don't want one. She said, Marlon, we need a cat. So we compromised and we got one. So we went to this place. In the world, and I walked in there. I was like, I want a cat, and the lady said, that's not how it works, sir. I said, please. She said, no, what it is, we need to interview you to see if you're fit to have a cat. And I started panicking. At this point, I said, listen, right, lady, right, listen, right, between me and you, I've got a son. I said, human being, 8 years old, and he's not dead. And she looked at me, she was like, yeah, you can have a cat. She brought the stairs, man. When she brought us up the stairs, I've never seen so much cats before in my life. There was more cats than people in this room right now, right? And they were there, different shapes, different sizes. And my girlfriend, she got drawn to one cat, which was like blue and grey. I've never seen a cat like this before, a blue and grey cat, and his whiskers were out and the tail was up, and she walked over to the cubicle where the little cat was, and she put her hand right up against it, and the cat came along and it put its paw there. And it was like they were touching. And she was like, I want that cat. And the lady said, no. She said, why? She said, well, that cat, it can't live with children. and my girlfriend looked at me like to say, fuck the kid. I want that cat. The lady said, no, you can't have that cat, but we've got some cats that are suitable for you, but they're in this corner over here, and she walked us into this corner, ladies and gentlemen, and all of the cats in this area here were black cats. Yes, and my paranoia, that went off straight away. I was like, hold on a minute, hold on a minute. We can't have that cat over there, but we can have any of these ones. I've got to fight racism in the real world, but also in the feline world as well. This is bloody ridiculous. And she said, this one's called Denzel.
I've made a list of pros and cons, because I've been spending a lot of time in brothels and prisons. Made a list of pros and cons, always good, give you a bit of balance, give you a bit of balance. Con, complete loss of all feelings of hope and possibility. Well, that doesn't sound very good, does it? It doesn't sound much fun, does it? Pro, increased plug socket access. Bang, one all. I say increased, it's actually total plug socket access. I've got 32 plug sockets in my house. Each and every one of them is now under my sole domain. Con, all experiences that formed the basis of my happiness and sense of self-worth are now destroyed by grief. Downer! A bit of a downer, isn't it? Pro, less recycling. I can fit it all in the green box now. It's remarkable when you take into account just how much I'm drinking. Oh, John, you're meant to heat mulled wine. All right, Your Highness, hand me the bottle and leave. Con, I'm gonna lose me house. bit of fun. Pro, 25% off council tax. I was on that like a ferret. Dialing as the door slammed. And that's us fresh out of cons. The rest are just pros, guys. Yeah. Increased freezer space, all four drawers. Cheaper gas and electric. Reduced wear and tear on fixtures and fittings. And when I say reduced, I don't mean by half, because I was only ever responsible for about 10% of scuffs and spills. So we're looking at a net reduction of 90% in real terms. This is my favourite one. Ultimate control over where the iPhone charger cable is and why it is there. There was a time it would take hours to answer the questions, where is the iPhone charger cable and why is it there? Not anymore. Plugged in next to the bed, most convenient place to have it. Simple. Is it unplugged in the bathroom? No, it's not. It'd be a ludicrous place to keep it. There's no plug socket in the bathroom. Is it in the front pocket of a rucksack you no longer use? That'll be the last place you look. That'll be very frustrating. Is it plugged in on a train we have alighted from? No. It's plugged in next to the bed, because that's the most convenient place to have it.